and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and Chavruta Yerdana Azband, our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf Lamed, page 30. So I'm going to start, halfway through, on Amud Aleph, where we have a discussion, again, coming off of the Mishnah, Klei Chesef v'Klei Nechoshet Mishtamshin Behen. If a person found, because still talking about found items, silver vessels or copper vessels, right, then, and this is the point from the Mishnah, then that the finder can use them for his own sake, whatever he could do, whatever he needs to do with them. And then the position is that the halacha would apply. We kind of derive from it to other vessels. Tana Rabbanan, hamotzei klei eitz, mishtamshin behen bishvil shlo yeirakvu. Klei nechoshet mishtamesh behen b'chamin, aval lo al yedei ha'or, mipnei mashchikan. Klei kesef mishtamshin behen b'tzonen, aval lo b'chamin, mipnei mashchiran. Magrefot u'v'kardumot mishtamesh behen barach, aval lo b'kasher, mipnei mafchikan. Klei zahav u'klei zchuchit lo yiga behem ad yavo Eliyahu. So what I am particularly interested in here is the different materials that one could have vessels made of and how that will have different implications on how the vessels could be used by the finder. Because our Mishnah keeps it very simple, right? You know, silver vessels, copper vessels, you could use them. But the Braita that kind of fleshes out the case goes through each of the different materials that vessels could be made from and explains a little bit more why that, yes, you could use them, but why can you use them or under what circumstances? So just to translate from the Braita, if a person found wooden vessels, you could use them to make sure that they're not going to kind of, I guess, get brittle, right? With wood that isn't used will be, vessels in particular, right, will end up deteriorating. Copper vessels you could use with hot, but not with fire, right? Because the fire putting them directly on the fire will erode them. So each one is going to have like the thing that goes wrong if you handle the vessels in that way. The silver vessels you could use with cold, but not with hot. The assumption being they're water, right? That you're using them to boil something in. Why not? Because that will tarnish them, right? As we would all guess with silver. Magrefot bakardumot. These are now rakes or axes, so they're not quite vessels, but even so, you could use them with soft substances, but not with hard substances, because things that are hard can then actually cause damage to them, to the rake or to the axe. And then lastly, if you find gold vessels or glass vessels, where using them or not using them, rather, which is the point here, not using them will not cause them any harm, do not touch them until Eliyahu comes and identifies the owner. Meaning if you could never find the owner, all these other things will end up kind of getting damaged or wrecked. But glass and gold will last forever. So don't touch them and don't risk wrecking them. Don't use them at all. Eliyahu will come. And he will solve this. It's a different version of teku, right? Like teku where we don't know what the answer is. In this case, we know what the answer is. We're not going to harm, nothing, no harm will come to these vessels. The Braita continues, Kedar shamru ba'aveda kach amru b'pikadon. Just as we're talking about a lost object, so too it would apply to a pikadon, meaning a deposit or collateral that's held while someone is guarding or protecting something else. Pikadon my avida tegabe. So specifically, the Gemara says, what is this shomer? What is this guardian doing with the deposit? Meaning, can he use it? Can he not use it? Is he treating it as his own? Amar av ada berchama amar rav sheshet b'pikadon shalchu ba'alehen l'medinat hayam. We're talking about a deposit where the original owner has gone traveling overseas, and then the shomer really has to take care of this, whatever it is, until the owner gets back. It's not something that's, there for safekeeping, but the owner will be making sure that it stays safe. So more a higher level of responsibility falls on the shomer, on the person watching. Okay. Then the Gemara comes to talk to the next line of the Mishnah, right? Matzah sak okupa v'chol davar she'in darko litol. If a person finds a sack or a basket or other items that are not the kind of thing that this particular finder would pick up and carry away, perhaps it's beneath his dignity, right? Like it's not his kind of thing to handle. Maybe it's a kind of thing that only women would handle or only slaves would handle, right? Hareza lo yitol. Then he should not take it. Meaning just because he found it doesn't mean he has to pick it up. So the Gemara says, where do we learn this from? How do we know this? Tatana Rabbanan, the sage of Tat, hit alamta. It says, and if you disregard them, if you ignore them, the very fact that the verse in Devarim 22, Deuteronomy, right, can say, and you know that you will see, you if you find, right, the animals wandering around and you were to disregard them, the very fact that it could say, and if you were to disregard them, teaches that sometimes a person could disregard them and sometimes a person would pay attention to them and take them home, meaning the found items, or in this case, animals. It depends a bit on what the finder wants to do with them. Hakeitzad. So the Gemara says, well, when can you disregard a lost item? We have a mitzvah, we have a biblical mitzvah to return lost items. So what does it mean to just disregard them or to turn a blind eye? Haya kohen v'hi b'veit kvarot. Oh, shahaya zaken v'enei l'fi kvodo. It's a, you know, the finder is a kohen and the item is in a cemetery where the kohen cannot go without becoming tamei. Everybody becomes tamei, but the kohen is not supposed to become tamei. Or as an elderly person, and it would not be according to his honor or dignity to handle such a thing. Or, for example, if he had the value of his work, if his labor is so much more than however much would be lost by the other person, meaning if the finder is going to return the item, and he then has to, you know, deal with lost wages because of the dealing, going through all the process of dealing with lost item, then you can say, well, he doesn't have to because it's too costly for him to take his time to go deal with lost item. Meaning, so we have certain cases where disregarding it would be acceptable. And the Gemara then goes on to say, like, why do we even need a verse to say that you could disregard a lost item? And that's, of course, to counter the positive mitzvah of actually returning that which is found. Okay, Yerdana, over to you.
Yeah, I think it's just before I start, it's interesting to see, you know, how when we think about losing an object, the Mishnah is really going to take the time, and then the Gemara, by going through all different types of categories and how they have to be cared for and what you do with them when you find it. I mean, I usually look at it as like if I find a lost object, I just kind of like tuck it in a corner and hope somebody will find it. I also can't keep help but thinking, it's so different in the modern era. Like, you know, when you've ever seen those social media posts of like, I found a lost bag of tefillin. I was thinking about this after yesterday's stuff. And you know, someone posts a picture and they find the owner. I actually had this happen. I was in Niagara Falls once and I found a sitter. And I was actually able to find, it was like a kid from a camp left it. I just wonder today, like how practical some of these things are. Like we have so many different means to return things to people today.
Well, I think you're touching on a really important point, which is that the way we would be machriz, right, where they talked about, oh, well, at one point you would have to like stand and proclaim and then you would only just let a whispered conversation go amongst your friends and acquaintances. Now, social media, even before that, right, Craigslist, like the ways that people can get the word spread far and wide is a totally different thing than it once was, that's for sure. Whether people bother, I think is also a good question, right? Like a sitter or tefillin, we know, very valuable. But like, I feel like a lot of things, a lot more things would like be under the category of automatic yeush, automatically presuming that you're never going to find it again. Like if you, I don't know, how many kids lose hats or water bottles or, you know, these kinds of things.
Yeah, I think that's great, right? And no one ever bothers to return it because it's just like, it's so cheap. But I think that gets into a little bit the question, you know, of that category of like, you know, the bag or the basket. Like, are there things that are just kind of like so cheap or so not valuable that they're just not even worth returning?
Right. Or, you know, do they have a siman? Is there a way to, like, I feel like it happens to be that my child loses water bottles. He's very responsible about other possessions, but the water bottles, not so much. And I don't mean like, you know, where you buy a bottle of water. I mean, you know, the reusable kind that has his name on it and maybe even his school name, and somehow it's just gone and nobody's coming to find us, you know, like, but could they? I think they could. And I think that just people aren't going to bother.
Yeah, because they don't. Yeah,
like I don't think it's about the expense as much as because they're not going to bother. You have to give up right away because really you have to move on with your day. There's too many other things to do. This is not going to. You're never going to find it. Like you can go back to the park for 10 minutes and that's it. And if it's not there, you got to move on.
All right, I'm going to move on now to our next section. And there's actually a couple of stories here. There's one with Abaye, and then there's one with Rabbi Yishmael that talks about returning lost objects. And there's a whole story with Rabbi Yishmael, which I'm not going to read. But basically, there was this wood that was somebody asked him to hold, but he's like an elderly man, and it's sort of not beneath him, his dignity, to have to help the person in that way. But yet he still's helping. And he comes with this whole halakhic solution by declaring, you know, by buying the wood and then making it ownerless so that he didn't actually have to lift the burden if he didn't have, like, it's a whole thing. So there's a little piece of like sort of a gadita here in the staff that I just wanted to share. But how Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi Zakein, Ve'ena Lefik Vodo Have. So wasn't Rabbi Yishmael, the son of Rabbi Yossi, an elderly person? And it was not with his kavod to have to worry about this piece of wood. And then it says, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, Lifni Mishurat Hadin Hu De'avad. And so the Gemara says that basically he was acting beyond the letter of the law, right? He could have just refused to help, but instead he wanted to figure out a way to help. And then from here, they give a source for why somebody should act, Lifni Mishurat Hadin, right? Why you should act beyond the letter of the law. Detani Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef taught, and this is a brisa about a pasuk that's in Exodus, chapter 18, verse 20. And it says, Behodata lahem, okay, you shall teach them, ze bait chayehem, right? This is the structure of their livelihood, right? That you're basically telling the Jewish people, you should teach them trade so that they know how to learn a living. Et haderech, the path, zo gemilut chasadim, this refers to acts of kindness, asher ye lechu, they shall walk, zo bikur chulim, right? That's visiting the sick. Ba, right, the word, you know, we're in, zokfura, that is referring to burial, the et hamasa, and the action, zehadin, that is referring to the law, asher yasun, that they must perform, zo lifni mishurat hadin. So this pasuk, which basically says, you shall teach them the statutes and the laws and show them the path wherein they walk and the action they must perform, is referring to all different types of sort of things that we do or learn, right? We need to learn how to make a livelihood. We have to bury our dead. We should do acts of kindness. But it ends with saying, Asher Yasun is teaching us that really we should do things that are beyond the letter of the law. And then it goes on to say, Amar Mar, Asher Yelechun, right? So it wants to analyze this a little bit more about, you know, Bikur Chulim and why the Bryce is structured the way that it is. I'm gonna skip that part. I just want to get to the part about the Lifni Mishurat Hadin. Asher Yasun Zo Lifni Mishurat Hadin. So again, that says they must perform is going beyond the letter of the law. To Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said, Lo Chavra Yerushalayim Ela Al Shadanu Ba Din Torah. Jerusalem was destroyed only for the fact that they, you know, sort of adjudicated cases on the basis of Torah law. So then the Gemara says, Ela dine migazita lidinhu, right? Should they have adjudicated it based on demagzita, like arbitrary decisions? Like, why would you destroy Yerushalayim because you actually use the Torah law to judge cases? Ela amai, rather say, shehemidu dinehem al din Torah, velo abdu lifni mishurat hadin. They established their rulings based on Torah and did not go beyond the letter of the law. I actually found this to be a very, very powerful teaching. And I'll get into modern stuff. Like, I can't help but thinking about certain modern, you know, let's say halachic conundrums we still have, particularly with Agunot, and I'll take 2 seconds to sort of stand on a soapbox about that. I read this and I was like, yeah, because we're ruling it by Torah law and we're not doing Lifni Mishurat Hadin. I just think this is a very, I don't know, this is like a passage I need to write down and go back to.
Yeah, I think your point about the distinction between Doraita Durabanan and what we're focusing on is particularly important in the Aguna question. And especially given, you know, we've had centuries of authorities, rabbinic authorities, saying to be lenient when it comes to Agunot, because we want to make sure that women are not chained to marriages that are, you know, traditionally it's because somebody was disappeared or was incapacitated. Now people are just icky people and keep their wives Agunot. I know it can go men can also be held hostage to a marriage. We know. But the point is, I appreciate what you're saying here, Yordina, the fact that the, by focusing on the wrong, by focusing on one element of this, we're missing the other side of it. And that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah. All right. We need to revisit this at a later date. I already see that I'm going to have to work this into a shiur or something in the future. All right. I'm moving on to a Mishnah here that's going to talk about what's actually considered a lost item. Ezohi Aveda, right? What's considered lost property? Matzah Chamor Parah Ro'im Baderech. If you see a donkey or cow grazing on the path, Enzo Aveda, it's not considered to be a lost property because presumably the, you know, owner is somewhere nearby and knows that the animal's there. But if you see a donkey with its, you know, overturned, Pararatza Bein Hakramim, or a cow that's running through Vin Aveda, that's lost property, right? Because that's not how or where you would expect to find an animal. Hechzira Ubachra, right? In a case where somebody returned the lost animal and it fled, Hechzira Ubachra, and again, you returned it and the animal ran away again. Afilu Arba'a V'chamisha Pamim, even if it's 4 or 5 times, Chayv L'Hachzira, you have to keep returning it. Shenemar Hashed Tishavim, because it says, you shall return them to your brother, quoting this Pasuk of Devarim, chapter 22, verse 1. Haya batel means sela, right? Let's say the finder was, you know, sort of in order to return the object, he actually ended up like not working and he lost, you know, a sela, you know, he lost some money. Lo yamar lo tain li sela. He doesn't say to the owner of the item, give me a sela, like to compensate for the lost time. Elo no tain lo skarau kipoel. Rather, the owner should give him a wage as if he was a laborer, which would be a much smaller payment. Ish yesh im yesham beitin matna pifnei beitin. If there is a beitin, he should stipulate that before the beitin, right? That he will only return the lost item, provided that he gets compensation for his lost income. Im ein sham beitin. But if there isn't a beitin, if there isn't a court, who should can he say his condition from? Shelo kodem. So his financial interests take precedence and he doesn't actually have to return the lost item. So it's interesting to see that even as much as we said, you have to return the item, you have to return the item, we kind of have this big caveat at the end, which is recognizing that it can take time, especially the way it was set up there, right? It's not, as we just talked about, putting up a social media post, but this could take a lot of time to return an item. And therefore, it's within your rights to go to a Beit Din and say, I'm only returning this with the assumption that I'm going to get, paid for the time lost or work that I lost. And if you can't do that, meaning there's no Beit Din, there's no way to enforce it, you're actually not obligated to return it. So I found the end of this mission to be fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious to see what happens next.
What the Gemara is going to do with this. So, you know, we'll talk more about the Gemara tomorrow. But the Gemara starts by saying, trying to understand, when it talks about what items are considered, lost property, they try to figure out, is the Mishnah just exciting, citing examples? Can we find a general principle? But we'll deep dive into the Gemara tomorrow.
That's our DAF discussion for the day. Thank you for joining us. Rank us, review us where you get your podcast. Come talk to us on our Facebook page and tell us what you think of this DAF. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. And until tomorrow, go and learn.